Hello, friends. It's your old pal, Ariel Helwani, back with another jam-packed edition of your favorite show, DC and Helwani. And as you probably know, we have a ton to get to this week. DC's on Fight Island in Abu Dhabi, so stay right there. A lot to get to. But first, I got to say, a little bit sad, a little bit bummed. The NBA season is officially over. The playoffs are over. Congratulations to the Lakers, to LeBron James. Respect that man. I had a lot of fun watching the playoffs from start to finish, and there to guide me throughout the entire thing was the great Brian Windhorst, the host of the Hoop Collective podcast. He's got a new pod out right now where he and Zach Lowe, it's like the Hoop Collective and the Lowe Post come together. They talk about the Lakers' incredible championship run and LeBron James's still growing legacy. It's called the Hoop Collective. Download and subscribe to it wherever you get your podcasts. And while you're there, tell Windy that I sent you and leave him a good review as well. And leave us a review, all right? Thank you. Okay, on to today's program. And as always, listener discretion is advised.
Now making their way to the microphone, DC and Helwani.
Use the code Ariel to take
it. And make it rain. And make it rain. Come on, man. I can't get one. You can't use the code DC1. Is that hard?
Here's Daniel Cormier and Ariel Helwani.
In your life on this second week of October 2020. Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to a brand new edition of DC and Helwani. That's DC. Daniel Cormier. Is it that one? I don't know.
Well, I'm in Abu Dhabi now, you know, so the sides might have switched. I'm all the way across the country, so you're a little bit like confused. You know, I get this one's
across the world, my friend.
Across the world, actually. Yeah.
And there he is, joining us live and direct from the United Arab Emirates. Yes, it is in fact.
Could you get it right? Live from Fight Island.
Oh, sorry.
Fight Island. He's live and direct from Fight Island. And I mean Ariel. Ariel. When I got off the plane and I stepped foot onto Fight Island, it was even better than I could have imagined. I mean, for a long time, it was a dream. It was something that was made up. It was imaginary. Yes. But now that I've experienced it in real life, I've seen the beach. I've seen the octagon on the beach. Fight Island is as real as it gets, Eric. And it's exactly what we expected.
There's something beautiful and symbolic about you after all these months, the man who thought of Fight Island, the man who talked about the charter planes and everything way back in March. Being on this show that we created from Fight Island is a beautiful thing. It's really a beautiful thing. First, I'd be remiss, DC, if at the very top of the show, I don't wish you a happy Thanksgiving to you and your family. One of the best holidays of the year.
Wait, what?
I hope you guys are having turkey.
Happy today, Thanksgiving. It's all Canadian, October 1st.
Canadian Thanksgiving.
Oh.
The second Monday in October is Thanksgiving.
Oh.
I'm a little surprised you didn't.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. It's October 5th.
The second.
What do you mean it's Canadian Thanksgiving? So y'all making your own holidays again? Canadian Thanksgiving. My goodness, I have never heard anything like this in my entire life. I am 41 years old. I spent 41 years on this earth, man, and you are telling me now there's a Canadian Thanksgiving. Come on, man. I don't believe that, man. One thing I can't believe. I've accepted all the stuff you throw my way, but there's no way I'm ever going to celebrate Canadian Thanksgiving. What about Halloween? We haven't got the Halloween yet. Y'all skip past Halloween?
No. We do Halloween.
You guys don't have Halloween?
As you know, winter comes a little earlier in Canada, so we like to celebrate the harvest a little sooner.
When did you guys have Halloween, man? July? Did you guys have Halloween in July? I mean, on top of the other 50 holidays that you put on me on this show, you legitimately had 50 holidays, man. Y'all just find a reason to celebrate up north, man. So I guess y'all at some point there's going to be happy National Raptors Day because y'all won that championship last year, right? That's going to be a holiday.
Shout out to the LA Lakers, your team. I know you're very happy. You're the long-suffering fan. You know, I know that you've You've bled and sweat purple and gold for many years. So congratulations to you.
It's been a while. Been a while since we have stood atop the world. And the king, LeBron James, has delivered everything he promised to Laker Nation. And we are very proud. We are very proud of the Los Angeles Lakers. They went to the bubble. They went into a situation, an extreme situation, and stayed the course. And now they are the world champion. So, yes, my Lakers, they got it done.
Well done. So I actually do want to talk about this whole experience. What is it like? Like, could you tell us when you left, the quarantining, the flight, like all this stuff is actually quite fascinating to me.
Yes, it is. It is. Ariel, first off.
Yes.
Went to Vegas, had to quarantine. I got there at 12 o'clock thinking I was going to go get some groceries and be able to do everything I needed to do for the trip. But instead, they told me I could not leave the hotel. So once you step foot in the hotel, you're stuck. So I'm there from 12 o'clock until 3 a.m. on Friday. This is Wednesday. Get on the bus at 3 a.m., go to the airport and fly over to Abu Dhabi, which is an 18-hour flight. Beautiful, beautiful service on the charter flight. We had like a 4-hour delay, though, before we left. So it made it a real long day. 15-hour flight. Got to Abu Dhabi. Immediately get tested. And then a 48-hour quarantine. I got to tell you one thing. I didn't realize how much I hate myself. I mean, you always tell me how good a guy I am. I start to question everything. When you're in a room by yourself for 48 hours, you question everything. And it was long, but I got out of it. Huh?
What did you do to pass the time?
Well, so to pass the time, what I did, first off, I stayed on American time because I'm going to call the fights on our time at home. So it's going to be the middle of the night here in Abu Dhabi. So what I did was I would stay up all night long. And then in the morning, 7 a.m., I take a shower, I brush my teeth, and I put on my pajamas and I go to bed. And I slept from 7 till... I slept from 7 till 4 in the afternoon yesterday. They did a wellness check on me because they bring food all day long. And I had like 3 bags of food outside. Like, so you order your food. Like, there's an order sheet. You put what you want and what time, and they bring it and they put it outside the door. They not leave it outside the door. I had breakfast, I had lunch, and I had like a snack all seated outside. They had to wake me up to go get my second test because you get tested every day. But I played video games and I watched TV. I've got some TV shows that I watch. And then I call my family and I Zoom call my children and just kind of hang out.
That they've been doing this thing. When people check into the hotel, are they like writing messages on the mirror when you walk in? Did they do that to you and like throw a big party?
That was for Dana. That was for Dana. I think Dana got the messages on the mirror and all that.
Some of the fighters did too.
I had a nice note. Hey, I'm an old retired guy. You know, what are they writing on my messages for? I'm just here to call the fights.
What about like the whole confetti thing and all that? They didn't do all that for you?
I'm just happy I got a room. You know, I'm just happy they didn't stick me in the utility closet or anything. So I'm good.
And what about I saw on your Instagram, you were playing Madden at the airport with or something. What is that?
I was bored, so like I figured, why not make some money? So I challenged a few of the UFC crew to games of Madden. So what I have is this, it's like this gaming system. I put my PlayStation in the bottom, and then when I flip it open, it's like a 20-inch television. So it's like this you can carry it on. I play it on the airplane too. I just plug it into the little port and I can play my video game on the airplane. That's nice.
So you just walk around with this thing?
I carry it like a briefcase. It's kind of heavy. It gets heavy a little bit after a while. It's like 12 pounds, you know, TV. I'm walking through the airport with a TV and a PlayStation in that case, just straps over my shoulder like a backpack. Jeez. I love it. Only problem is a little bit small, right? So I got to sit real close to the TV, but it's fun, man. I enjoy it.
What about the F1 track? Have you done that yet?
Dude, this is the thing. It's all closed. Everything's closed.
Why?
Everything's closed on Fight Island this time. The F1 track is closed. The golf course is closed because this time it's 5 weeks on Fight Island. Before, it was like a 2-week thing. The public and the members of the golf course were okay with it being, you know, closed to them for a couple weeks. But now they want their tee times. It's 5 weeks closed in the F1 course. It's all that fun stuff that we saw in the beginning is closed. I'm a day late, dollar short.
I would have loved to see you squeeze into that little thing.
There's no chance I would get in there. I'd never get in those cars. I'm scared of that. I'm afraid of that too. Driving fast, not for me.
So how do you feel? You're going to be there 2 weeks, and you know what's crazy? You're doing the fights on American time zone for Zombie Ortega, but then the Khabib fight is on Abu Dhabi time zone, so you're going to have to adjust as well. It's pretty remarkable what you have to go through here.
So on Sunday, when I get back from the zombie fight, it'll be morning. I'm going to have to push through that barrier, right? That idea that I want to go to bed, I'm going to have to push through it and try to stay up all day and start to get myself back adjusted to the time here. Because like right now, it's 7 o'clock at night, you know, and I feel – or 8 o'clock at night, and I feel like it's first thing in the morning, right? Feels like first thing in the morning, right? So I just had my coffee. I got dressed. It's like my days are just starting, so I'm going to have to try to adjust that as I get ready for that second fight.
Well, this is great. I mean, I'm
happy. It's a big situation. It's a different situation for me, honestly. Like, I haven't been out of the country in a while, and it's a bit scary, you know, with everything that's been going on in the world. But the moment you get off and you realize how the things that are in place to protect you as an athlete and as a person that works in this company, there's nothing to fear.
It's amazing. Just a boy from a small town in Lafayette, Louisiana. Look at you.
The North Side.
Fight Island, just doing your thing, walking around. I saw your setup that you have over there with your TV and your multiple TVs. You got, I think you had Deron Wynn over there. I mean, I got inside scoop. You know, I have a little surveillance camera on you over there. I'm big in the United Arab Emirates. You got to try the food, by the way. The hummus is tremendous over there. Have you had it yet?
I had some bread yesterday. I don't know what
the pita bread, right?
It was the best bread. It was the best bread I've ever had in my entire life. It was like a little charred. It was so good. But yeah, I had to run on the phone watching some kids from my wrestling team wrestle in South Dakota this weekend. It was great. I had one of my kids on my team is an eighth grader. He won a freaking 18U tournament. It's been good. I've been spending the time watching those things.
Well, this is wonderful. All right, so I'm happy you're okay. I'm happy you made it safe and sound, that you'll be still joining. That's the consummate professional that you are. Despite
reality is, you guys tried to give me off. Like, you guys actually – so at times I worry. I'm like, are they trying to replace me? Because it was like, DC, do you want the time off while you're in Abu Dhabi? I'm like, no. I think you and Askren have gotten far too close, and now you're looking to kick me out the door. And I'm watching you, Hawani. I got my eyes on you, dude.
Never. I'm loyal. To a fault, they say. I am loyal.
I'm loyal. I've been out on the front line for you for the last week and a half, from there until all the way down. I've been watching your back, you know, so you better be good to me.
And we will get to some of that later on in the show. But first, we have to give Corey Sandhagen his due, because, DC, I've been very high on Corey Sandhagen. And some people said I was a little too high on him. And then he stumbles against Aljo. And then, in a weird way, gets a bigger fight in his next fight. His bounce back fight is a higher profile fight. It's a main event against the former champion in WSOF, former title contender, Marlon Moraes. And what does he do? He knocks him out with an incredible spinning heel kick. I mean, just an amazing performance, and it makes me think once again that Corey Sandhagen is going to fight for the belt one day. That was just an amazing win. He started off calm, cool, and collected, and you know about this, right? It actually made me think about you a little bit. You come off the biggest loss of your career, and then you have to fight. The next fight is bigger than that one. Reminds me of you versus Jones and you versus Rumble, right? Reminds me of you versus Jones, you versus Volkan, and he stepped up to the plate just like you did. Very impressive stuff.
Well, it's a matter of how do you recover after something so devastating, right? There's a saying, I don't know it exactly, like the measure of a man is not how he behaves in the comfortable times, but how he handles the times where it's, you know exactly what I'm talking about, right?
Close enough.
It's something of that saying, you know, like, how do you measure Corey Sandhagen after you saw him last weekend? Because you went in a fight with Aljo that at the time people were saying, this should be for the vacant title. This should be the title fight, right? Corey Sandhagen, this guy, Aljo, this should be. And they decided to go Piotr Jan and Jose Aldo. But he got beat in that big moment, went back and had to face down what many people think is the most dangerous fighter in that division, right? Marlon Moraes is scary. He beat on Henry Cejudo at the beginning of this fight. He has looked like a world beater. He beat Aljo, knocked out Aljo, right? How do you bounce back? And what he did on Saturday night was truly amazing. For him to stand in there and be so comfortable to throw that attack and land it in the way that he did. When you talk about making a statement and reintroducing yourself to the highest part of the highest level of your division, that's what Sandhagen did. It does not feel like the loss now did anything to hurt his stock in the bantamweight division now after that performance.
What I love about Sandhagen is, like, he doesn't look like your typical fighter, right? Like, afterwards, a reporter asked him why he came out to Biggie's Give Me the Loot. And he's like, yeah, I look like a pale white guy from Colorado, but I'm gangsta too. I was like, yeah, you know, Corey Sandhagen, he's the man. He also, he hates paper towels. I don't know if you know this about him. He's very environmentally friendly. He's really into the, you know, the environment. So like, to me, it was just like he was just attacking Marlon Moraes. Like he's a guy who uses too many paper towels. You know what I mean?
That's all cool. That's all cool. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's all cool. You know that he doesn't like paper towels and that he's a gangster. But I really just care about him being able to fight. I care about the fact that he had a great performance on Saturday. You know, like that's you, right? Like you bring all these things together. And but the reality is, I don't really care how much he likes paper towels. I just like that he can really get after it and that he had that type of performance. And honestly, puts himself in line now for another big spot. And on Saturday night, he said something like, I'm not, you know, I can get a title shot, right? He feels like he's right back in the title picture. And after losing the fight before, most times you'd laugh it off, right? Like, this guy, whatever, he's just talking. But when you beat the number one contender in the division in the way that he did, you really got to start paying attention to it and start really saying, Sanhagen isn't 2-3 fights away now from earning the title fight. If he can win one more, or if he's willing to play the backup for Aljamain versus Piotr Jan, I'd put him there.
Well, you know who was the biggest winner on Saturday?
Oh,
Aljamain Sterling, right? Well, he was the biggest winner by far.
No. Aljamain Sterling wasn't the biggest winner. It was good for Aljo, right? That Corey Sanhagen won. The brother that did that spinning back kick thing was the one. That dude. I know I'm getting ahead of myself, but when you say who's the biggest winner of the night, yeah, sure. Aljo, that was great for Aljo, but nobody won bigger than the brother with that spinning kick, that matrix stuff that he did.
Okay, fair enough. I just mean from that fight, that result.
Okay, from that fight, yes.
Joaquin Buckley, a.k.a.
Well, let's not act like Corey Sanhagen. Aljo, because he dominated in that way, yes. Big moment for him. Well, and really feels like it secures a title fight for him, right?
That's why he was the big winner, because A, number one, the win over Sanhagen looks better in hindsight, and B, there was talk of Marlon fighting Jan last week. Even Jan himself put it out, as crazy as it was. So I feel like Aljo's the big winner because it secures it, so I'm happy for him. But what about what Corey Sanhagen said after the fight? He threw out two names, Frankie Edgar, fine, but another one who we haven't heard of in a long time, TJ Dillashaw. I love this idea. Both. TJ coming back against Corey Sanhagen. Now people need to know, TJ Dillashaw's suspension is up in mid-January. He's free to fight come, I think, January 20th of 2021. So he's up in like 3 months, essentially.
Getting close. Yeah, it's getting close.
I love that fight.
So I read somewhere that TJ Dillashaw may be coming back at 125. He might be coming back as a flyer.
There's no chance he's coming back at 125.
I read that somewhere. I read that on the internet somewhere, that he was coming back as a flyweight. And, I mean,
what got him in this mess?
Hey, listen, sometimes people learn. It's a little harder for people to learn their lessons. You know, we want to keep trying to correct it. But Sanhagen versus Dillashaw, that's a great fight. It's a great fight for both, though, right? Because if TJ beats Corey Sanhagen, he puts himself right back in line. And if Corey Sanhagen beats him, it's that big shiny name. We talk about this all the time, right? We talk about it with Neil Magny, with Leon Edwards all the time. You need that big shiny name on your resume that makes everybody take notice. And I believe that if Corey Sanhagen can get a win over a former champion, TJ Dillashaw, that's exactly what he needs.
And conversely, if Dillashaw beats him, now he's right back in that picture.
Right back where he was. But I mean, going for 2 years and that's the type of fight you come back into as TJ Dillashaw. I mean, wow, that's a big moment.
Yeah, maybe it is a little tough. I mean, TJ versus Edgar, 135 is very fun. I know now for sure it should be Sterling versus Jan, maybe even on December 12th. Then we'll get to that card in a little bit, which, of course, lost its main event last week, Kamaru Usman versus Gilbert Burns. So maybe they put Jan versus Sterling on December 12th. Now let's talk, DC. Let's give Joaquin Buckley his due. Let's talk about Mr. Buckley and what he pulled off. An incredible knockout, maybe the best knockout in UFC history. Definitely the best. As we sit here right now, that's the best knockout of 2020, and if something beats that, I would be shocked. I don't know if I've ever seen anything better than that in recent memory. What did you make of what Joaquin Buckley did in that incredible sequence?
The best thing about the Joaquin Buckley situation was that Impasanganai was undefeated, right? And everybody was talking about how good Impasanganai is. So when Joaquin Buckley kicked him, Sanganai catches his foot and stays there. Now, I've seen people do that all the time, right? That's like one thing. You block the kick and you kind of wave it down. But you realize that he propelled himself off of one foot into a spin because, dude, Sam and I was still holding his foot. He was actually still holding his foot off the ground. So this young man actually was able to generate enough power to propel himself up and then spin and kick him in the face. That, when I watched that on TV, I was like, oh my goodness, I think I just saw the greatest knockout I've ever seen in my entire life. We've seen some good ones, right? Edson Barbosa did the spinning heel kick that knocked out dude way back in the day. We've seen some crazy ones, but nothing like, I mean, how do you even do, like Francis Ngannou actually said, you watch something like that and you kind of think like, I'm going to go work on it in the gym and realize I don't want to hurt myself, because you get excited and go, hey, imitation is the greatest form of flattery, but nobody's doing what Joaquin Buckley did last weekend. That is the only time, I'm confident saying, that will be the only time in UFC history you'll ever see anything like that happen.
Wow. Okay. Have you ever tried that?
I did against Roy Nelson, but I had both feet on the ground and it looked terrible. It looked terrible. I tried it with both feet on the ground and I looked terrible trying to spin it back kick in it. I never tried it again because there's no way, bro. All you're thinking about when you throw a high kick like that and they wave it down to the ground is getting your foot back down. Right. You want to get back to position where you can be able to attack or defend. He was so free that he jumped and did a spinning back kick and kicked him in the face. And I can't believe he got a $50,000 bonus. I would have given him, I don't know, I would have given him two bonuses, $100,000 for performance. I'd have given him fight of the night. Performance of the night and fight of the night, because
maybe they broke out the old $1 million check like they gave you back in the day.
Well, I'm sure he got, this dude probably got some money in the back. He asked. That was crazy. Greatest knockout in UFC history.
So it's interesting. When you talk about the greatest knockout, I'm wondering, do stakes matter? For example, like,
no.
Stakes don't matter, okay, or can you separate them? Basically, can you separate like Conor knocking out Jose Aldo is a big knockout, right? But yes. It wasn't as
flashy. In a title fight,
right? So do stakes matter, or do you separate them? Like, you put like the Barbosa was a prelim fight as well, and this one, and you know what I mean? Or like Anderson knocking out Vitor with that kick, that was insane, right? Yeah.
But that doesn't matter, bro. Like, I think when you look at these types of situations, when you look at these greatest knockout in UFC history, you look at the actual knockout. I don't think you say greatest knockout in UFC title fight history. That's okay. I think Anderson or Connor, those two stand out to me above most of them, right? But in terms of just a knockout that showed an insane display of skill, an insane display of athleticism, and ability to really let go in the octagon, I don't think we've seen anything like this. And he should be very proud, because I don't know if you can't catch that lightning in the bottle ever again. Like, that won't ever happen again in the UFC.
You know, some haters were saying like Owen Hart and Vampiro have been doing kicks like that for years back in the day, like in the squared circle.
Yeah, man. But guess what, though? We're like Owen Hart and Vampiro, Owen Hart, rest his soul. Yeah. They were in the back going, when you grab my foot, I'm going to do a spinning back kick.
Yes, right?
They're like agreeing to what's going to happen.
You don't think I'm being serious, do you?
No, I don't. I'm saying, but this is a free fight, right? Like, boy, for that to happen in that situation was crazy.
It was crazy. Incredible knockout. Great footage afterwards of Dana White coming up to him and he's saying, I'm going to cry, and talking about the bonus and everything. Just seems like a great young man. I've never met him before, but very happy for Joaquin Buckley. It's cool to see a moment like that just extend outside of the MMA bubble. And can I just say this very, very quickly, DC? Can I say this? Because the great Scott Van Pelt, who I know you know of as well, I don't know if you saw, but he got a little bit of heat. Because on Saturday night on SportsCenter, he talked about how it was hard to see, you know, the head bounce off the canvas like that in the aftermath. And I understood where he was coming from, and people were attacking him and calling him all kinds of names and things like that. Can I just say this? I just want to say this. I've been working at ESPN, and no one told me to say this. In fact, they probably didn't want me to say this, but here's the thing. I've been working at ESPN for 2.5 years, right? Dare I say, there is no SportsCenter anchor or star at ESPN who has tried to embrace and learn about MMA more so than Scott Van Pelt. When I'd be on the campus in Bristol, it comes up to me, hey, who's this guy? Tell me about this guy. What's the big fight coming up? He really took a liking to Izzy as well. Oh, what about this? What about that? Every time I'm on, complimentary about the sport. This guy's not a hater. This guy's not trying to put the sport down. Scott Van Pelt is a supporter of the sport. He's allowed to feel like something was a little hard to watch. And guess what? At its core, the sport is very violent. People need to lay off a little bit and stop being so insecure about what the sport is.
Yeah, certainly. But the reality is, and I get it. Like you said, he's a big time supporter and he's a fantastic sports anchor. But there have been times in mixed martial arts where it's been much worse, right? There's been much worse. So I don't understand how that one is it's hard to watch. Because even whenever Stipe and I fought the first time and I knocked him down and I went over and just was banging his head against the mat, like that would have been more difficult, right? Because Sanga and I never even took it. He never took no follow-up shots. He just fell, right? Like it's like he didn't take either. It's like he didn't jump on him and start following up as he's knocked out. You saw a couple of the bad stoppages that have happened earlier this year where you're like, man, stop the fight, stop the fight. So I don't know if maybe Scott hasn't been watching or maybe the action was so explosive that he's like, wow, he was really out all the way as he hit the mat. I get what he's saying, but there's been a lot more violent finishes over the course of the year.
And I don't think that's his point. All I'm saying is, not everyone has to have universal praise of the sport. There's good things and bad things about all sports, football, hockey, basketball. There's good things and bad things. And I just think that when we attack other people who don't universally praise it, it's a bad reflection on us as a
And also,
all I'm saying.
Also, like, hey, and also Scott Van Pelt and all those guys, like, those guys are they're the real deal. They're real life reporters. They're real sports anchors, and they cover the sport. And the more that they're covering our sport, the better it is. They bring a set of eyes to this sport that sometimes people don't get. So we can't – I feel like we have to, as MMA people and MMA fans, understand that as the sport continues to grow, different people and opinions will be inside of mixed martial arts. We can't be so like – it's almost like it's ours, so you guys stay away. We can't live like that in our sport. Otherwise, it'll never grow to what it can be.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Let's transition over to the other big news of this past week. And it's obviously Conor McGregor and your guy, Dustin Poirier. So the story, the saga that is Conor McGregor in 2020 took another turn on Thursday when he revealed to the world that he has, in fact, accepted a fight against Dustin Poirier. Mm-hmm. And he also said that he would be donating $500,000 to the Good Fight Foundation because that was, you know, a stipulation in the charity fight that they were trying to set up. But there is a bit of a stipulation on his part now in accepting this fight against Dustin Poirier, and it's that he wants the fight to happen in 2020. Now, the UFC, from what I'm told, offered him the fight on January 23rd because that's the next pay-per-view without a title fight on it. We know that on November 21st, we're getting two title fights. We know it's going to be Alex Perez versus Davison Figueiredo on November 21st and also Valentina Shevchenko versus Jennifer Maia. And as of right now, we know that Megan Anderson versus Amanda Nunes for the 145 title will be on December 12th. We lost Kamaru Usman versus Gilbert Burns. They're trying to add something. So Conor is saying, hey, you got, you know, a thin pay-per-view to be kind on November 21st, and you also just lost your main event on December 12th. Put me on one of those. UFC is saying, no, we want you on January 23rd. What do you make of how this whole situation is playing out?
I wonder how it works business-wise, right? Like, how does it work in terms of a business? Like you said, Conor McGregor, he does big business every time he's out there. Like I said before, get him on a fight. He wants to fight. I thought that you losing, there was a fight in November. I said, put him as the main event in November and move, put those guys in the co-main event. That works. I also believe that come December 19th now it works, right? Because Amanda Nunes is a title fight. You only have one. Putting Conor McGregor on the in the November card now, because I didn't know that Valentina Shevchenko was fighting on there whenever we spoke about it last week. Putting Conor McGregor on a pay-per-view with two champions who share the pay-per-view revenue, that's going to be like a massive bill. But December 19th, you have one champion, right? You have just Amanda.
December 12th.
You have just Amanda, right? And Amanda does pretty good for herself anyways. So then you don't have to worry about splitting the pie way too much. But, I mean, I'd let him fight. I mean, if he really wants to fight, I'd let him fight. And I hats off to Conor for the donation, right? Because you don't have to do that. You don't have to give Dustin the $500,000. I tweeted that the other day, like, hey, I know at times I can be I can talk about Conor and it may come off as if I don't like him. I think Conor's great. I think he's a great fighter. I think he's a great guy. But when he does something good, I want to applaud him. And for him to say he's giving $500,000 to Dustin and his foundation, and for Dustin to say that he's going to build a boxing gym on the side of town that we grew up on, that touches very close to me, and I appreciate that. So if he wants to fight, I say give him December 12th. Put him on there with Amanda Nunes, and let's see how it goes.
Well, okay, so let's get a little inside baseball here for the fans that might not understand what is going on. There's a bit of chess being played here between the two sides, right? So the UFC is saying, great, you want to do a charity match, you and Dustin? All right, how about you guys actually fight for us because you're both contracted to us? So let's be honest, they weren't thinking of booking Conor versus Dustin too, but it was kind of forced upon them after those tweets. So they said, all right, next available pay-per-view, January 23rd, let's start the year off with a bang. Conor's response is, no, I wanted to fight three times in 2020. Put me on one of these cards that are a little thin. The UFC doesn't want to do that, as you alluded to, because when Conor fights, it usually does very well pay-per-view-wise, right? In the 1 to 2 range these days, correct? Now, the champions usually get pay-per-view points. Davison Figueroa is not a big draw, but he gets pay-per-view points.
Sure.
So does Valentina. So does Amanda Nunes. This is why when Conor fights these days, other champions aren't on those cards because they don't want to give pay-per-view points from a $2 million or $2 million buy pay-per-view to someone who didn't necessarily earn it, because now you're dividing that pie a little too much and you're not, you know, making as much yourself. So that's the game of chess. He's saying, just put me on with another champion. And they're like, no, we're going to put you on a card with no champion. What they could do, and I wonder what you think about this, is what if they told someone like Davison? What if they did this? Davison and Valentina.
I think it sets such a bad precedent. I know where you're going. I think it sets such a bad precedent. It's so I know exactly where you're going, where you're saying, hey, Davison, how about you move to December? Or Valentina, you move. That sets such a bad precedent.
Insulting?
For a champion. It's very insulting as a champion to go, hey, we have a fight card that we promised to you, but now this guy wants to fight. We're moving you off the card. And we're going to give him that card individually. It's such a bad precedent, and it'll leave such a bad taste in the champion's mouth, right? This is a champion. This is a person that is going to be fighting for you, and you never know what they're going to become. But yeah, I think it's too big a precedent to move someone who's already scheduled to fight off to accommodate someone else that essentially is saying, I want to fight, and I want to fight now. Because what happens next time, right? Like, I think it just sets too bad a precedent to start moving fighters because your biggest star says, I want to fight today. You know, I'm going to fight for you, but I want to fight today. It's kind of a bad precedent.
I'm happy you said that because I agree. I do think that's insulting. So what about this? What about this? What if you sell it this way? You put Valentina on the December 12th card, not because you want to reject. Listen, you put Valentina and Amanda on the same card because now they're flying in the same orbit to build the trilogy. And then you put Davison on the same card as Conor and he gets the rub as the co-main. What's wrong with that?
No. I get it. Listen, if you're going to move a champ, right, I think having Amanda and Valentina on the same card is great, right? It's like you can do a whole bunch of stuff in that way. But if you're going to try to – business-wise, right, if you're going to move people, right, and like I said, I don't think you should move those people off of that card for McGregor in November, but if you do, you move them back, give them more time to prepare for their fights, I get it. But I say you put all three title fights on the same night, and then those three title fights you hope will sell. You get Davison fight first, right? Amanda gets eyes, bro. Amanda gets eyes. People tune into Amanda Nunes now.
Moving them, and you just said not to move them.
No, I'm saying you don't, but you're saying move Valentina instead. Mm. If you're going to move one, and you're going to move them both, right? If you're going to move them both back and just try to all put them together and hope that that pay-per-view, those three together, does well and does sell. Because I just think that if you're going to, you sell three title fights, you don't sell, because Conor doesn't need a belt at this point, right? It can be just Conor McGregor versus whoever. But you have to go – you have to try to sell with the Amanda fight, and I think you put all three of them together if that's what you do. But me, I'm not moving them. I'm leaving it just as it is, and I'm telling McGregor, hey, man, try to just fight in January. How big – why is it such a big deal? You know, because, again, it's all –
you know why it's a big deal? Because – and I wanted to know if you wanted to apologize to him, because people like you said he didn't want to fight, that he was just playing games. So he's like, not only do I want to fight, I want to fight next month. I want to apologize.
It's every – well, first off, when he goes and fights, yes. I'll be like, wow, dude, yeah, you want to fight? Apologize. But the reality is – like, but the reality is, Ariel, like, is he really just kind of like – is it just a big – you know, like, I mean – power play, right? Like, move your champions for me to have this fight date. So I think it's just like, God dang, dog, again? We doing it again? Like, you're just going to try to punk me, right? Like, move your champions because I decided I want this date. It's kind of, it's a hard spot, man. And you want him to fight. You want him to fight, but, like, do you want, like, I mean, seriously, man. Are you giving Conor McGregor more power? Like, do you really relent more?
I love the idea of moving Valentina to December 12th because you say, I want Valentina and Amanda to be on the same card. They both win probably.
If this was not public, if it wasn't public, then you do it privately. But since people know that it's already set, the visuals of you moving them to make sure that Conor got what he wanted is not good. And it's not even that it's not good for the fans. It's not good for Conor to know that he has that type of power. I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's a fascinating game of chess being played here. And in the end, it might end up being January 23rd. You just hope that it's not a take it or leave it. Imagine they say take it or leave it January 23rd, and then he says I'm out. I don't think that would be good for anyone. I mean,
it won't be good for anyone. We got to find a way to make it work. And I think they will, right? Because think about it. Early in the year, he retired. A couple weeks ago, it seemed like they were going to fight in a charity match. Now we're talking about a date in 6 weeks or 5 weeks, right? That's how fast things can change.
There's a Manny thing, too, in there, too.
Yeah, the Manny thing was in there. So I think things change really fast, and I believe that that's going to happen with this situation too. It'll go work out.
So you're not going to apologize yet. That's cool. I respect it.
You want me to apologize to Conor McGregor because I said that I didn't think he – I never even said I don't think he wants to fight. I said if he really wants to fight, give him that date. And then he takes that date. Sadly, I didn't realize that they don't want to like – I didn't know they don't want to pay all these dues pay-per-view. Like I didn't know. I thought Conor didn't want to be on the pay-per-view with champions because he didn't want to pay everybody. I didn't know.
It doesn't come out of his pocket. He makes it.
No, but I'm saying, like, he's just building. You know, he's like, this is something I heard a while back. You know, I don't know where I got it from, but maybe it was you or – it was Ariel and the Bad Guy. Ariel and the Bad Guy said that McGregor didn't like main event pay-per-views with champions. So, I got it from you and Chael. That's where I got it. I got it from Ariel and the Bad Guy. So if anybody owes an apology, it's you and Chael to me. You guys need to apologize to me.
You could have said, I want to take this opportunity to apologize to absolutely nobody, and it felt like, you know, that would have felt right. But I served that one down the middle for you. You didn't knock it out. Now, let's talk about another guy who likes to play baseball. How about that transition? Let's talk about Tony Ferguson. Let's talk about Tony Ferguson coming out all fired up last week. You had a lot to say when I spoke to him. It was great. But DC, he talked about 170 maybe. He's in a weird spot, and I want to tie two stories together here. I want to tie Tony Ferguson's situation to Dan Hooker and Nate Diaz, who are doing a little dance right now. I kind of like the idea of Tony versus Nate Diaz. Remember, they were supposed to fight a few years ago, but Nate seems to be interested in Dan Hooker. The whole thing is a little bit confusing. What do you make of all of this?
So I like first off, Tony Ferguson is the man, right? Tony Ferguson has just completely ignored the fact that he got beat by Justin Gaethje. Like, it's over, right? Like, he's moved past it. Like, Tony's moved past it. Now it's time for us to move past it, too. And he's going to talk his talk. Like, go ahead, Tony, talk your talk. Which seems like a difference, right? Paulo Costa is telling Izzy to just sign the contract. Like, what contract, Paulo? Like, what contract? There is no contract. There's no contract now. There's no contract coming, Paulo. But, like, if Tony Ferguson goes, just sign the contract, he went five rounds, right? He got finished, sure, but there were moments. And you know Tony Ferguson is just a savage. So when he starts talking off the cuff and starts going off and crazy, you kind of just take it as, it's Tony being Tony. But I like Nate versus Dan Hooker. I think that's a great fight. And I know what Nate is doing, right? I know what Nate is doing because Nate's taking a shot. This is a shot, I think, at Gilbert Burns. I think he's taking a shot at Gilbert Burns, right? Because when they were talking about, he's like, when Izzy said something about Dan Hooker, Nate's like, your boy's the best welterweight in the world. And he showed him beating Gilbert Burns. right? So it's like this whole little game of like everybody kind of taking shots. It's really fantastic to have Nate's taking a shot at Gilbert Burns and Gilbert Burns taking shots at you. Then you got Dan Hooker taking shots at this dude. You got Izzy and Jones taking shots. It's this whole – this MMA has turned into the Young and the Restless. It's the greatest soap opera that has been on for 50 years because everybody's kind of just dabbing at everybody. But ultimately, when's the payoff? And if the payoff is Nate versus Dan Hooker, Gilbert Burns gets to beat you, then I'm good. You know, like that, it's like when all these people talking to
Jones. Let's throw another ingredient into the pot, right? At the same – okay, so Gilbert and Kamaru is out, right? And I bring up again, Leon should fight Gilbert. All hell breaks loose. But at the same time, DC, this is the best. I couldn't have picked this any better. At the same time, there's RDA pulling out of the Islam Makhachev fight. And the same people who are saying that I'm crazy for Leon fighting Gilbert, by the way, number two versus number three, are the ones who are campaigning for Islam Makhachev, who's the man. Number 12, though, to fight Michael Chandler or Tony Ferguson. Michael Chandler, who's the backup, or Tony Ferguson. How in the world does this make sense? I mean, this is the richest thing I've ever heard. The same people who are saying, I am crazy for saying Leon number two and number three, Gilbert Burns, or two and three, you know what I'm saying, should fight each other, are the same people who are trying to campaign for Islam Makhachev number 12 to fight the backup to the title fight or Tony Ferguson. Explain this. And by the way, you're one of those people.
I did it too. I caught myself being biased. Like I caught myself being biased, right? Like I was like, I caught myself being biased. Islam's a teammate of mine and a friend. And I thought, wow, big opportunity for Islam. Here's the problem with the Islam situation, right? Islam goes and beats Michael Chandler. Then what's next? You end up in the same situation as me and Kane, right? We'll fight each other because Kane's a champ. Islam can't go to 45. Is Islam going to go to 70? It's a very difficult situation when you get those guys that are so good in the same weight class. But then again, I get Gilbert Burns. I get Leon Edwards' side going, give me the fight with Gilbert Burns. I can beat him and solidify myself as number one contender. But I also get Gilbert Burns' side where you're going, wait, I've got my title fight. Why would I fight anybody else? My work is done. I'm only waiting for the champion. I get what you're saying. When you go, hey, it just makes all the sense in the world. How long is Usman out for? We don't know. It's like it all makes so much – the things that make so much sense usually are the things that are most like explosive and the things that you can't really come to terms with because all of it makes sense. Even Islam Makhachev fighting a guy like Tony Ferguson, that all makes sense, right? Because Tony is lost his last fight. He was a former champion. It all makes sense. But ultimately, it could never really work. And it's going to just put us in a situation where we find ourselves in now, where you're getting attacked, Leon's getting attacked, Gilbert's getting attacked, Nate's throwing attacks. Dan Hooker's trying. For me, to sit back and stir the pot is the greatest thing because I'll talk to you, then I'll talk to the other side. And
it's like water off my back. I'm like a duck over here, okay? Let me tell you something. But here's the thing. Islam Makhachev is an incredible fighter. I really enjoy watching him. And dare I say, he's underrated. I think Islam should be
a lot
further along in his career. But you and others, including Khabib, have said he only has two fights left. So even if he does fight, this is what you should have said. I'm giving you your rebuttal here. What you should have said was, give him a Michael Chandler, give him a Tony Ferguson, because Khabib is apparently done by this time next year, correct? That's what you guys are telling us, right? 30-0, yes, we're walking away. So what's the problem? If he beats a Chandler and fights with someone else?
But
it's not you and Kane.
That's a problem though, right? I got all the way to number three. We came, right? And then it was like, but thing happened.
About to retire. Like, Khabib is about
to retire. No, I get it. But I got all the way to three. But then you know how retirements work, man. Is Khabib really going to go? Like, I think he will, but we don't know anything for certain. But I would like to see Islam and Chandler. I think
we know that. You tweeted it. And you pissed off Michael Chandler. Let me tell you something.
Chandler can't be mad at me. Why would he be mad at me? It just makes sense. Chandler's my guy.
He's the backup.
But no, I get it. But it also, for Chandler, it also shows, if he gets through Islam, it shows, wow, I can fight that style because Islam and Khabib have a very similar style, right? It works in that sense, but does it work for the rankings? It doesn't. There are a lot of different factors in this whole deal. That's why it's so fun, right? But that's why it's so fun because there are so many different elements to a thing that seems like it should be so easy, but it's still so difficult. It's still so difficult. I love it.
Selfishly, I'd love to see Michael Chandler fight in 2 weeks, right? Against it. Islam. Like, it'd be fun. I understand why he's like, nah, no way. You know, why would I fight a guy who's number 12? The problem is they gave him this backup title fight and he's getting paid to weigh in. So he doesn't want to waste it. But once the Khabib Gaethje fight happens, he's no longer the number one contender. Or is he, right? Like, you know what I mean?
Well,
like,
let me tell you who's the number one contender. I'll tell you who's the number one contender. A little Irishman that might fight in November. If the Irishman wins in November, he's the number one contender. Because now Chandler's right back in that position where he might end up fighting the Islam Makhachev, right? Well, like, I mean, think about it.
I tweeted out that I don't hate the idea. It's just so great because I can see all the trolls' heads spinning now. They're like, oh my God, what are we going to say now? Because I think that Leon should fight Gilbert, and I would be okay with Chandler fighting Islam, especially since RDA is out. And especially since he's going to be there and making weight. But you can't sit here and tell me that Leon and Gilbert is a crazy idea, but also sit here and tell me that Islam versus Chandler is a great idea. Oh, you can't say that. That's hypocritical.
It's the exact same thing. If not, Gilbert and Leon more logical because of where they sit in the ranking. Like, that might be more logical. But like I said, I can see all those sides. If I'm Gilbert Burns, I'm not fighting Leon Edwards. I'm telling you that right now. If I'm Gilbert Burns, I'm just waiting for Usman.
If you're Chandler, you're not fighting Makhachev. Although
if I'm Chandler, I'm not fighting Makhachev. But as Islam's training partner and friend, I will float the idea. I can say it. I was a bit, of a team guy on that deal. But because you never know. You know, some guys are, hey, if that was Tony Ferguson, you know what Tony would have did? Fought him, right? Because Tony fights everybody. Tony fights anybody, anytime. So you never know what the other guys think. And when you float that idea out there, Michael Chandler is just not one of those guys that kind of just wears his heart on his sleeve like that.
I'm curious to see how this week and next week plays out. Conor Dustin, the Islam situation, the Tony situation, the Diaz Hooker situation. There's a lot of things that are happening here. Michael Chandler, there's just so much. Khamzat and Chris Weidman, they're offering Chris Weidman Khamzat, and Chris is like, what are you, crazy?
This is the thing, and I want to say this right now on record.
Please.
You speak very highly of Islam Makhachev. You speak very highly of Kamaru Usman. You speak very highly of a lot of these guys. So when these guys are saying that you are on them, and Gilbert Burns too, like, they, you are not doing anything wrong. You speak so highly of these guys, but ultimately it is our job to speak fairly and equally on everything, the good and the bad. So that's one thing fighters need to chill with sometimes. I get that a lot, right? I say a lot of things about these guys. And even Jan Błachowicz, because now I'm not even going to say his name right anymore. Jan Błachowicz, like, right? I give him all these compliments, right? I make a video praising him. But the moment you say something negative, all of a sudden he's upset. It's not that, listen, it is our job to speak fairly about you. And if you can't handle it, then this public life is not for you. Because not everybody's going to, and it's not like you're even saying anything wrong. You didn't say nothing wrong about Gilbert Burns. All you said was, maybe you should fight this guy. It's 2-3. It makes sense. That is not wrong. You constantly praise these guys, but we have to do our job fairly. And people can't be tied to one way or the other. You have to be able to do your job effectively, and that is what you do. So continue to be who you are.
Amen. Thank you, DC. That meant a lot. That's you.
My boy. On the record, because it's the truth.
Thank you.
On the record, Islam's the man. Islam Makhachev is the man, and you recognize that to him yourself. You're not hard on Islam or anybody. It's like, it is what it is.
No, underrated. Actually, should be further along, if you ask me. A name that a lot of people should know.
What's something that works so well that it's basically magic? Air conditioning, noise-canceling headphones, meeting-free Fridays. Well, what about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch at your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million order stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're auctioning autograph apparel or selling sleek skis, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort, thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/DCRC. All lowercase, go to shopify.com/DCRC now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/DCRC.
Let's move along and let's talk about Internet Izzy, or Interweave Izzy, as he likes to say.
I'm not calling him that. I'm not calling him that. I'm not calling him Interweave Izzy. It sounds like he made up that name. Did he come up with that himself?
He may have. He may have spun our name. Well, but hey,
he put it on the internet.
He likes it. He likes it.
Put that on the internet. He was like, Interweave. I'm like, no, Izzy, you don't get to choose your nickname. We give you a nickname. That's how it works, right? When somebody gives you your nickname, it works better. So, yes, we're going with Internet Izzy.
Internet Izzy got John Jones to, and by the way, that's a mini towel this time, right?
That's a small one, you know.
In the hotel, in the hotel you use a towel, but like when you do the show at home, you don't use the towel.
Yeah, you know, just my place is like perfect to my temperature. It's like everything that I want. Oh yeah. Oh, please tell me what Izzy got John Jones.
By the way, Interweave or Interweb? Did we mess that up? I think it might have been Interweb, Izzy.
Anyway, it's Internet Izzy. Tell me what Izzy got John Jones.
He got John Jones to admit a story that Chael P. himself revealed many years ago.
For years.
Yes, like one of the all-time MMA secrets, like folklore, all this stuff. He got him to admit just casually that he did, in fact, hide under the ring at Jackson Wink to avoid a drug test. Now, John said it was because he smoked, right?
This is pre-USADA.
Pre-USADA. Athletic Commission. Surely you have heard of this story, right?
I think it was before we fought the first time.
Oh, wow.
I think it was before we fought the first time, if I'm not mistaken. I think it was before we fought the first time.
What was when this happened, this, I think. When you saw him admit to it.
I was like, wow, it was actually true. Well, because I heard it. Like, I've heard it for years. And like I said last week, I was like, I didn't use it because I couldn't prove that it was true. It was true. It was true. And honestly, like, I don't really like to talk about Jones because it sounds like he's bitter. But the reality is, like, if it's true, and with Jones's history, if you believe that it was from marijuana, you're as stupid as him. I mean, you're as dumb as him because then come on, that's the dumbest excuse. I smoked that. So that's why. Come on, man. That's not true, man. That's not true, man. Come on, man. I'm sorry, Jones. I'm not buying it. I'm sorry, Jones. You were cheating, man. You were cheating just like all those other times and you got scared. He hit underneath the octagon. I mean, but boy, you got to have a criminal mindset. You got to have a criminal mindset to know that that's the place that they're not going to look is underneath the octagon. Could you imagine that? Under the octagon?
How long?
What's under there? But like, what's under an octagon?
Right.
Think about that. Storage. Is it storage? Like, are there boxes under there? Is there a whole bunch of old equipment under there? Are there roaches? There's roaches under there for sure. There are roaches under there.
Like, no light, right?
No light.
Boring as hell.
And at what point do you feel safe to come out? Like, at what point do you feel safe? Is there somebody calling him? Did he have his phone? Like, did he have his phone under there? Like, was he sitting, like, with his legs crossed? Was he laying down? Like, there are so many factors as to what he was doing under that octagon. That should have been rock bottom. That probably should have been rock bottom, honestly. Like, oh, man, I'm doing stuff so wrong that I'm hiding under an octagon from the drug testers.
Well, and should have been rock bottom. I would love to know, what if the drug tester said, like, all right, we'll wait till he comes back and sat there for, like, 8 hours?
They probably did. Well, if you listen to Uncle Chael, it was a long time he was under there. Uncle Chael said he was under there for like 8 hours.
Yes.
Uncle Chael said he was under there for a long time. So, geez, man. But boy, the discipline, right? The discipline to sit under there all that time is crazy. But how is he? Didn't I tell you last week? Izzy must have had him breaking plates, like breaking stuff in his house. And then he admits to doing that. He got him. He actually got him. That's crazy.
But did that piss you off when you heard it? Because if it was actually before...
A little bit. I mean, like, listen, the guy failed drug tests on multiple occasions after we fought, before we fought, or like, you know, he's, I mean, I know that the guy does bad things, right? But so to hear that, that was real. Yeah, it's very disappointing and discouraging. It sucks, you know, because ultimately, like I've said a number of times, I don't feel like the guy needed all that stuff in order to win the fights. You know, he could win and fight anybody anytime. He just does not need to be doing those things. And it just shows me a level to which that people had to go. And then what about the rest of the people, though, right? How do you look at everybody else, right? Like, this was not done individually. So who else was, like, involved in him doing that? You know what I'm saying? Like, you got to look at a lot of people in that gym and go, wow, you guys are kind of dirty a little bit. Like, kind of dirty.
Incredible that Izzy got it out of him.
this has been going on for 6 years.
There's a battle going on right now between – it's not head-to-head, but there's a battle going on right now between Israel Adesanya and Darren Till for, you know, social media person of the year, because both –
Okay, but wait. I love Izzy. But Izzy does go too far sometimes. Like, sometimes he's going too far. Yeah. Like, I love him, and he's using social media to build fights and aggravate and annoy people. But at times, he goes too far. And I can't agree with some of the things that he does. But the reality is, man, those guys are in a bitter, bitter war. And it's so sad, too. It's so crazy because the only thing Jones wants is to fight him. But he won't give it to him. This is like the ultimate. This is the ultimate mind play here, right? Annoy. Poke him, but don't give him the opportunity to fight you. It's actually masterful. But don't go so far sometimes at Adesanya.
And the Till stuff with Mike Perry is very interesting. He is relentless.
He's bad.
At first I thought he was actually being sincere, but now it seems like he wasn't being sincere. It's a corner.
He was gonna throw the tie. He was gonna make him lose. He was gonna make him lose.
More money to make him lose. I actually thought he was looking out for his guy because he felt bad for all the, you know, the internet bullying and stuff, but now it seems like he wasn't being sincere. Darren Till is just
Darren Till's out of control. Exactly. And Darren Till told Hosmat, I'll give it to you, but is he being serious? Like, is he being serious?
I think he's being
serious. Darren Till's something else. See, but Darren Till also does it in fun, but at times can go a little far because you know how he puts his face on different pictures?
Yes, it's
he
great.
He put his face on a picture with Mike Perry's wife. Oh, ex-wife. Yeah. And then he put a picture on with Mike Perry, the girl he's having a baby with now. Like, he's going too far. Like, yeah, these guys go too far. They go way. There's a line. Like, the line's right here. They just jump the line and they just take off sprinting into the backfield. Like, these guys are out of control.
So I don't think that Mike Perry will have Darren Till in his corner, but let's see what happens.
What about the other company? They're like, a lot of people, this Mike Perry thing has become crazy. This Mike Perry thing has become crazy. And imagine if Mike Perry has now shown a new way of, like, making money, you know, because what are the rules? That tells me that there are some rules that need to be looked at. That can anybody get licensed to be a corner? Is there no combat spirit experience required to go and corner somebody in a fish fight? Like, what?
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
You see, before we go, we have to talk about this weekend. Zombie Ortega, one of the best grudge matches of the year. And then after that, we're getting one of the best boxing matches all under the ESPN umbrella. Lomachenko Lopez, incredible fight. Probably the second biggest fight of 2020 in boxing behind Fury Wilder, which happened in February, but really feels like it happened 9 years ago. First, let's talk about Zombie Ortega. DC, I love the backstory to this fight. You know the whole thing started on my show, right? You know that Zombie Ortega were supposed to fight late last year, and then Ortega gets injured, and Zombie goes on my show with a translator, but really the translator is this K-pop star. You know who K-pop is, right? You okay there?
K-pop?
Yes.
What's K-pop? What is K-pop?
It's like Korean music. It's very popular in South Korea.
Oh,
like,
I've seen stars. That. I've definitely seen that.
Yes, it's yes,
cartoonish.
Yes.
Very cartoonish.
Yes, it was this guy named Jay Park, who's a huge celebrity in South Korea. He has millions of Instagram followers, but he's also buddies with Korean Zombie. So he came on my show with Korean Zombie to serve as his translator. I didn't really know who Jay Park was because, like, to be honest, I'm not a big K-pop guy, but it was a big deal. And so he was translating what Zombie said about Ortega running. They're like, oh, he's scared, this and that. Just like, you know, usual banter, like nothing really big. Ortega was pissed about this, didn't like the translation, didn't like that Jay Park was saying this. So he sees him at the Izzy Romero fight in Las Vegas, the last fight that had people in attendance, and walks up to him and slaps him in the face. Jay Park in- and told him beforehand, when I see you, it's on site. According to their team, waited for Zombie to go to the bathroom and then went up and slapped him in the face. So there's some real bad blood. Now, from what I understand, Jay Park won't be on Fight Island. I think he should be in attendance. I think it should be like Jay Park on a pole or something, like old school pro wrestling match. Like Jay Park. But this is an old school beef right here. California and South Korea coming together. Did you know?
I mean, Brian Ortega's a gangster. Huh? Brian Ortega slapped that man. He slapped him.
Yes, allegedly.
Oh, allegedly T-City.
On the broadcast on Saturday, you need to say, I was talking to my boy, Helwani. He gave me the whole thing. You know, this is what happened.
That ain't going to happen. I'll tell you that much. I like my job. Hey, I'll tell you one thing. I like my job. And I'm going to say, hey, I got from an unknown – I got from an unnamed source that he slapped Jay Park. He slapped Jay Park at the UFC Izzy Romero fight. And Brian Ortega.
Just do me a favor and somehow mention Jay Park, like on the.
I'll mention Jay Park, but the one person I'm not mentioning is sitting right across from me right now.
But you got to. I mean, he's a legit. This is not just some made up thing.
No, he's not. He's a storyline. He is part of the storyline. Like he is part of the story, dude. I cannot believe that. But I remember when those guys were supposed to fight, and it seemed very cordial initially. It seemed very cordial. Like, hey man, we're gonna go out, we're gonna do our thing, and we'll see how it goes. But now there's bad blood. When I got the call to go to Fight Island, I was going to fight, and they said, you're going to work two cards. They said it'll be Zombie Ortega. I didn't even know all this, but I was excited about the fight because of the matchup, because of the way that these guys match up, because of the skill that Korean Zombie has, and also the skill Brian Ortega. We've seen Brian Ortega come so far in his stand-up, but the grappling is what has gotten him to where he is today. But also you see the Korean Zombie, and the intrigue of the Korean Zombie is that when he's in there, he's so spectacular. But also the fact that he's not here very often, right? The Zombie's here and then he's gone. He's got a bit of a cult following, right? Like no matter what he does, we pay attention. But you watch those two and it's gonna be fantastic. I can't wait. I remember, I've never really met the Korean Zombie, but then one time I was in an elevator with him, and I remember even as the champ, I was like, it's Korean Zombie. And you want to talk to him, right? Because it's almost like he's this mythical creature that goes away and then comes back, and he's got that thing, man. And if he can get through Brian Ortega in a weight class with a new champion in Alexander Volkanovski, he might be looking on the barrel of another title fight.
Well, first, let me say, coolest MMA t-shirt ever, the original Korean Zombie shirt, right? By far the coolest. If he wins, you don't agree?
You know, sometimes you say stuff and it's like, what? I think to myself, how in the world do you expect me? I don't even remember what Korean Zombie's first T-shirt looked like. Like it's almost like you say stuff, bro.
Come on.
You say
stuff, it's iconic.
Then you say stuff, and then I'm forced to kind of just like nod my head, like I know what you're talking about. When in reality, I have no idea what Korean Zombie.
No idea about Korean Zombie.
Come on, man. Look, it's like what? Like, come on, Ariel, man. Like, come on, Ariel. I'm Daniel Cormier, man. I'm not sitting around. I don't have a Korean Zombie T-shirt, man. You think I have a Korean Zombie T-shirt? Like, come on, Ariel, man. Like, sometimes you say stuff, man. I'm like, come on, man. I'm supposed to know what this dude talking about, man. How am I supposed to know? And then I get on the internet, somebody like, DC's not as prepared as Ariel. How do you expect me to know all this stuff, man? What Korean Zombie's first MMA T-shirt look like?
Oh, my God.
That's crazy.
The best. All right.
That is crazy, man.
I thought you do.
You got to stop doing that. You put me in a bad situation on multiple occasions. Every time we do a show, you tell me about some stuff from freaking Hamzaku Sakurai all the way to this dude's t-shirt, man. Like, come on, man. Come on, Ariel, man. You gotta stop doing that to me, man.
Anyway, In addition to that, I think if he wins, he'll be next for Volkanovski. And conversely, I really want to see how Ortega looks. Do you see, we haven't seen Ortega since the Max Holloway fight.
Remember we talked about? That's what we talked about earlier, right, with Corey Sandhagen. It's like, how does he respond after a situation where Max kind of put it on him? You know, like, is he going to be better today? Is he going to look the same? There's a lot of interesting factors going into the fight this weekend.
Dare I say, Brian Ortega had a choice.
Yes, he did. Wait a minute. Wait, what happened?
Don't say anything. No free plugs. Wait. No free plugs.
No, it's not free. But wait a minute. Something's missing from the show today.
Hey, listen to me. Lopez Lomachenko right after. Are you going to watch this? Are you guys going to watch this on Fight Island?
Well,
hey, Lomachenko's the man. Hey, he's a wrestler. You know that, Lomachenko?
He's the man. Lomachenko's the man. Lopez is a fantastic fighter. This fight is going to be explosive. And it's free, right? It's free on ESPN. You know, it's not even – this is a pay-per-view level fight, right? There have been pay-per-views that do not have this type of matchup and this type of star power. With ESPN, you get it free. And it just reminds me of old days in boxing, man. When we got those types of fights for free, ABC, Wild World of Sports, where we get those big-time fights on free television, and I'm glad that ESPN's giving that fight this weekend.
Oh, what a great night. I mean, you go from the UFC card to that card. And by the way, fighting on that card as well, the top-ranked card, Cassius Clay Collard. Remember Clay Collard from back in the day?
Clay Collard is still winning. He won that last fight.
Yes, he's undefeated in the top rank bubble, and he got on this card, arguably the biggest card of the year. This journeyman MMA fighter has all of a sudden, and he has the audacity to call himself Cassius Clay Collard, like his nickname is Cassius.
Yeah, I mean, but nothing wrong with that. Sometimes you got to shoot your shot. And he did, Cassius Clay, and now he's winning in boxing. I mean, this is perfect.
Good for him, right? Stay winning.
Yeah.
Hey, by the way. This has been probably the most stressful show of my life.
Yeah. My computer's about to die.
What are we at percentage-wise? We started at 11%.
I'm at 11%. We started at 34. Like, this is a brand new computer.
Wow.
Hey, listen, man, you know, like lately, I was thinking about Dak Prescott. Did you see that yesterday?
Yeah.
I mean, that's sad, isn't it? Oh. Everybody's on athletes about trying to get the big contract and doing, and most people, it's almost like fighting out your contract in MMA, right? And then getting knocked out. Right. You got a kid like Dak Prescott who was on his rookie salary, I mean, $4 million total. Obviously, he got franchise tag this year, so he's making 31, I believe. Right. But this dude, compound fracture, hurt his ankle, foot was twisted backwards, right? So you had the feel-good story of Alex Smith playing for the Washington football team on Sunday for the first time in years. And you got a young guy like Dak Prescott that gets hurt like that. That's why when these young athletes are fighting for their money and for their guarantees, we can't judge them so unfairly whenever they take a hard stance. Because now look at Dak, right? This young man now obviously has made a lot of money over his career, but never got through his rookie contract. Was one of easily should have been one of the top three paid guys in the NFL. And now he gets an injury like that where he's going to be away for a long time. So I just wanted to kind of, you know, give a shout out to Dak Prescott and say that our hearts are with him and his family during this difficult time. But man, you athletes, you have to get what's yours right now because you never know what tomorrow holds. Sad, sad situation for Dak Prescott.
Hopefully they take care of him. And they make it right, and he makes a full recovery and is better than he was before. But, yeah, that was heartbreaking to watch. And good luck,
especially
by the way.
As he was carted off and he was crying, right?
Oh,
because
man, it's horrible.
Could you imagine, like, the enormity of the situation must be hitting him as he's getting taken off the field. Like, wow, look at where I'm at now as a young guy. Like, and a great guy.
Yeah.
I mean, Dak Prescott is a great guy. Like, a great guy, really nice kid. You know, was at the fights in Dallas when Tyron beat Darren Till. Just a really nice guy, man. And it's unfortunate that happened to him.
If you need anything over there, give me a call. I'm big over there.
There you go again, offering stuff that you can't go.
If you find yourself in a jam, tell them hello.
Oh, me.
Yeah.
I thought you were talking about Dak Prescott.
I'm saying you over on Fight Island. Say you know a guy named Mr. Khalwani. You have to go to because we're big. My family's from the Middle East. I don't know if you know this. So I got your back. You know, I know you're cool with Khabib and all those guys. Listen,
You're cool with Khabib. I'm very cool.
I'm just saying I will open doors for you that you can never imagine. Okay, that's all I'm saying.
Okay, good. So you got the power here. You got the juice.
So I'm gonna let
you got all the juice now. Okay.
That's right.
I got you. My man. All right.
We're out of time. This has been fun. This has been great. Good luck with the sleep schedule over there. Good luck with the streaming and being in your hotel. And good luck on the call. It's been a while since I heard a Daniel Cormier call on a fight night. I feel like it's been over a month or so. So looking forward to hearing your voice, seeing your lovely face on Saturday on Fight Island. All right, we're out of time. Yeah. Thanks to everyone, as always, for listening, downloading, subscribing, reviewing, rating, all those things that you do. Back next week, same time and place. Until then, we say peace. We're out of here.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.